Welcome to the Load Management Dialogue Podcast presented by PLMA. Here you'll discover practitioner perspectives regarding flexible energy load management, including demand response and distributed energy resources. You're listening to PLMA's Load Management Dialogue.
Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us for another edition of the PLMA Load Management Dialogue Series. I'm Mike Smith, Senior Program Manager for Demand Response Programs at National Grid, PLMA Awards Committee Co-Chair, and I'll be your moderator for today's session. Today we'll be hearing from one of our award winners of the 16th PLMA Awards, Eversource Energy, about their commercial and industrial active demand management demonstration project. We're joined today by Michael Goldman of Eversource Energy. Michael is a director in the Energy Efficiency Department at Eversource Energy, the largest energy delivery company in New England. His team at Eversource is responsible for the development of the company's behind-the-meter distributed energy resource strategy. He is a frequent contributor to conferences and articles on distributed energy resources and their impact on the evolving grid. Prior to Eversource, Michael worked as a strategy and operations consultant in Deloitte Consulting's energy practice. Michael, thanks for joining us today and to talk about your project. I guess just to get things started, can you talk just a little bit about the basics of the project? Talk about how it originated at Eversource and what problems you were looking to solve.
Great. Thank you, Mike. I'm very excited to be here today to talk about our CNI demand reduction demonstration project that won one of the 2018 PLMA Thought Leadership Awards. And really the origin of the project and what we were trying to solve. So really what we're talking about is our first initial use case was we were trying to figure out what we could do to help reduce the overall ISO New England system load. And we're really trying to do that to figure out to what extent we could have economic and environmental benefits for our customers. And so one of the things we were trying to do is see if we could reduce those peak loads on the absolute highest days of the year, and then maybe potentially lower the amount of capacity that was being purchased in the region. And then by lowering those peaks, what we would also be able to do in turn is reduce the amount of inefficient generation that was being run so that we could also have a beneficial environmental impact in addition to those economic impacts for our customers.
So I understand that there were quite a few technologies that end up in play in your project. When you guys were first scoping the project, what kind of research was done to determine, what type of technologies you wanted to include in the demo project in order to meet those goals?
So we didn't come into the demonstration projects with any sort of preconceived notions of what technologies might be best. Really what we wanted to do was a lot of load research, really understand how our customers were using energy and when they were using that energy, and that we would then try to match a set of technologies to those different types of, I guess I'll call them customer load shapes. So what we did is we really dug into those 15-minute interval data. We discovered what we call patterns within the load shapes, and we essentially developed customer types. And then from there, what we did is we tried to decide or figure out what types of technologies were good fits for the individual types of customer types and the individual different types of load shapes that we were seeing. So ultimately, the idea was to pair the different technology types with the different customer types and the load shapes that we were seeing.
So in addition to some of the goals you had outlined earlier, were there any sort of key research questions that you were looking at and sort of a strategic planning, going forward with how you would use DER?
Absolutely. So we had a whole host of research questions that we were trying to get answered. So we were really really interested in understanding better, what were the different types of customer reactions? Really, what was the customer acceptance of these types of solutions? And more so than that, how do you reach these customers? What are the most appropriate delivery channels? Is it through project developers? Is it through ESCOs? Is it through some other type of channel? We were very interested in better understanding what solution types were best for each type of customer. So just as an example, our utility is in Connecticut, Massachusetts, and New Hampshire, and we have the fishing industry in parts of our Massachusetts service territory. So looking at things like thermal storage as maybe a good solution for a fish processing plant, it's longer duration type of solution as opposed to a lithium ion or a battery that might have a shorter duration, something like that. So really understanding those different customer types and what they were using the solutions for. We wanted to know if we could address issues both during summer peaks and then when there's high winter demand as well. really trying to get a better understanding. What is the scale of the opportunity within our service territory? And then are there any sort of associated barriers, either from a technology or a business model or a regulatory standpoint, to more full-scale development or deployment of those solutions? So we had a list of, say, high-level research questions that we were trying to work through that I just mentioned some of them. But then we also had more what I'd call granular level or micro level type questions. So quite literally, how much energy was being displaced for how long using these types of solutions. So we had seen some more generic research that had been done in other parts of the country. But really what we wanted to understand was, given our specific climate, given our certain types of customers, you know, really what were these solution sets? What were they going to save specifically for the types of customers that are in our service territory?
Great. So I think you've kind of addressed some of the goals and how you were looking to pair projects and customers. Could you tell us a little bit more about some of the demonstration projects that ultimately, you know, made it, and which customers those were paired with, and sort of how that process evolved?
Sure, absolutely. So again, at the outset, we were really trying to find an innovative approach to reduce this peak demand issue amongst our commercial and industrial customers. And really what we thought ended up distinguishing this approach in the end was just the breadth and the recognition that really different types of customers, they require different types of strategies and solutions in order to bring them into a program. And at the same time, hopefully minimize customer operational interference. One of our key tenets was that if we can find solutions that don't cause customers to really have to alter their operations, or they don't really know they're operating, but the solutions are constantly operating in the background, that's really going to encourage customer participation and really prevent customers from opting out of the programs. And so one of the things that we had noticed is that in some other areas, we'd seen more of a one-size-fits-all type of approach. And the issue there is that you may not be able to get certain customer subsegments to participate in your program. And what I failed to mention earlier, when we were doing some of our initial research and some of our initial due diligence, we were essentially looking at that ISO load shape, because we were trying to reduce that peak at the ISO New England level. And when we started breaking that down, we started to essentially decompose it into its constituent parts. What we discovered was that there was no individual load class or customer class that was responsible for really driving the shape of that peak. So when we started looking at load shapes at a customer class level, you could really see a contribution of all the different customer classes. So that was one of the reasons at the outset that we thought we needed this more holistic approach, and that we really couldn't kind of rely on this more of a one size fits all. So as we went through this process, and we kind of had already come to the conclusion that we needed to develop solution sets that were going to be more all-encompassing and reach a wider variety of customers, that's really when we said, okay, now we need to have a lot of different solution types, but not too many that it's not manageable. So what we had settled on was battery storage, so essentially lithium ion batteries, ice storage, so essentially thermal storage, but two types of thermal storage, ice storage, and then phase change material. We also introduced advanced software and controls, and then two types of what I'll call more traditional demand response or curtailment type services, one for large CNI customers, and then one for small business customers that was really based on a Wi-Fi thermostat based approach. So similar to what we might see with residential customers. And so the thought process again was that we would essentially have this one offering, but it would allow us to enroll a wide range of businesses, which we thought would be essential to how we were going to maximize this load reduction and then drive down that overall system peak. And the ultimate vision really was to develop this type of holistic approach where we could have these various types of technology types, but hopefully each using either open communication protocols or something along those lines, so that back at Eversource, we could aggregate all of these different solution types and then actually dispatch them in a coordinated manner so that we could have that larger impact. That's kind of this aggregated impact. And then hopefully that we could have some sort of make a material difference within the system level peaks that we were trying to target.
Great. So I guess this project's been underway for a couple of years now. You know, can you share sort of some of the key sort of results you're seeing, and how they may be compared to any preconceived expectations you had before you started?
Absolutely. So we were able to install several large lithium-ion batteries at offices and at some universities in the area, We were able to go into some cold storage facilities and put in phase change thermal material. We were able to use ice storage units at several office buildings in order to offset the need for air conditioners. We were able to go into several other office buildings and install advanced software and controls. We exceeded our target for our large commercial and industrial active demand, more of the manual curtailment type of load. And then on the small CNI side, this is one of the areas that I think we were a little surprised at actually how difficult it was to get more customers enrolled from that segment. That's, I think, a notoriously difficult segment to get a lot of participation, and especially in a program like this. But what we were seeing is that there were issues between who had operational control of the HVAC systems at small commercial and industrial or small businesses, whether it was there might be landlords that have control versus the tenants, or even within the tenants, there might be an owner that's not always there who has operational control over the HVAC systems. And so it's not necessarily up to the folks that are in the building on a day-to-day basis. So really, I think one of the big takeaways from all of this is how difficult commercial and industrial can be, and kind of what's the right solution set for that customer base. I would say some of our other main takeaways were that installing batteries takes a really long time. There can be all sorts of issues that pop up that were not necessarily expected. But I think as we work through some of these issues and we gain more operational experience, the hope certainly is that we can smooth some of that out. So just as a couple examples, we actually encountered some local permitting issues where the local officials essentially considered storage as a generating source, and that where we wanted to put these units wasn't zoned for generation. So it actually took a lot of outreach and a lot of meetings with the local officials to really educate them about what energy storage is and how it functions and why we didn't consider it to be essentially a standalone generating unit. There were issues in terms of how these types of assets go through the interconnection queue, which can sometimes take a while. We had to learn a little bit more about the civil engineering work that has to get done for these types of projects. So necessarily needing, in some instances, drainage ditches. Or we had one instance where the customer wanted to install security posts, and they wanted to put it at one distance, but actually the fire department wanted them closer to the actual unit. So in the case of an emergency, they could actually back their trucks up closer to the unit. So those were kind of some of the things that we didn't really expect that can actually have a significant impact on the timeline for some of these projects. But in terms of how they performed, I think we were overall quite pleased with the performance. The batteries, the lithium ion batteries, worked pretty much as we'd expected them to in terms of the load reductions we got. I still think we have some questions about the efficiencies of those types of assets and the round trip efficiencies and how best to measure and calculate that. And then one of the other things I would mention is for advanced software and controls, one of the things that we ran into was that for these to really function, or our assumption was that for these to function at their highest levels, some of these advanced software and controls essentially have to be operating on the customer's intranet. And not surprisingly, that caused some cybersecurity concerns from the customers about having a third party come in and essentially have their software sit on the company intranet. So working through some of those issues as well. So I think those were some of our main key learnings from these projects. But our hope is that we can take these demonstration projects, and in many instances, we have taken the learnings from these demonstration projects and have begun to roll this out more programmatically across our three-state service territory.
So it sounds like, you know, Eversource feels that this project was certainly a success. And you mentioned the programmatic expansion. You know, what's next with this type of DER portfolio at Eversource? Is it rolling out again, technology neutral across your territory? Do you have certain, you know, favorites you found where you think have the most potential within your customer base? You know, what's next for Eversource?
Yeah, we absolutely want to roll this out programmatically across our service territory. So one approach we've taken is a little bit more of a technology agnostic approach. It's really more of a pay for performance program design where we don't want to dictate to our customers how they get load reductions. Really, the customer is the expert about their facilities, about their processes. And so what we want to do is come in with an incentive and essentially tell customers, you're the expert. When we call for a demand reduction, you figure out how best to do that. We'll provide technical support if you need it. Some customers need it, some customers don't. But what we'll do is we will pay you an incentive based off of verifiable load reductions after the fact. So we'll use the interval data to come in after we have had a season. We'll look at the average KW reduction during the times that we call the dispatch, and we will then pay an incentive based off of that measurable and verifiable load reduction. So we think that's a really successful approach that we've used over the last year or two. One thing I would mention is that we do have a specific call out, or I say a different incentive level for storage. And the reason we carved out storage separately is because we think it has other attributes that really make it attractive. And really what I mean by that is we can't call a traditional demand response event every single day. We just don't think customers will have a tolerance for that. If they're changing HVAC set points or they're changing production processes or whatever the case may be, they can't do that every single day. But I had mentioned earlier, one of the things we're trying to do is really minimize customer operational interference. And so by having storage installed and being willing to pay a little bit extra for that, folks can dispatch their storage and hopefully really notice minimal or again, hopefully no operational interference. And so that actually allows us to dispatch it on a much more frequent basis. And there's a real value to that. So we essentially had a tiered incentive and structure where we paid one incentive level for a technology agnostic approach and then a higher incentive level for that storage approach. So that's something we're trying to roll out more broadly. And you had mentioned, what else are we thinking about and how else do we want, you know, what else are we testing? So one of the things that we're actually testing right now that we're trying to bring into our portfolio is managed EV load EV charging. And so essentially using two different strategies to manage that peak load. And one I'll call scheduling and one I'll call throttling. So on the scheduling, what we do is we can actually push a schedule, a charging schedule, through a level 2 Wi-Fi enabled EV charger for customers that opt into the program. So in that instance, a customer may come home, plug in their car at night, not have to touch it, go back inside, and we'll just control the charging so it doesn't start charging until midnight. So the customer will still have the charge they need by morning, but it won't be charging during those peak time periods. The other strategy that I just mentioned is throttling, and that's more like a typical demand response type of event where during times of acute grid conditions, or if there are peak times that might set the capacity requirements for the ISO, for a limited amount of time, we can actually send a communication, a dispatch instruction, again, to those level 2 Wi-Fi enabled chargers and have them temporarily ramp down the charge rates for a couple hours until that event is over. So maybe a long-winded way of answering the question, but we are both trying to scale this up programmatically and at the same time bring in new types of technologies, new types of measures, so we can go after different types of loads as well.
Great. It sounds like you have quite a bit planned going forward. I just want to circle back on one point you'd mentioned, sort of you have a technology agnostic type approach and then maybe a more storage type approach. And I'm curious both about that and if this will change going forward with EVs, but what's your approach to M&V for this type of programs? Are you trying to treat them all the same? Do you have to sort of customize your approach to storage and EV compared to other load reductions?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And so what we try to do when we scale up is determine if there's an ability to do the M&V at scale or whether or not each solution type requires some sort of specialization. And so what we found is we do need some degree of specialization in terms of how we're evaluating these different programs. So on the batteries, for instance, we can pull data directly from the battery inverter, see when it charged and the depth of discharge and for how long. So that's actually a really easy way for us to be able to understand what those demand reductions were if you were using a battery. On the technology agnostic approach, it's a little bit more challenging, but luckily there are already what I'd call relatively mature types of methodology. So what we adopted was essentially what ISO New England does, which is essentially a rolling 10 of 10 baseline where we look at 10 most recent days and we make some adjustments if there were outliers or there might be an in-day temperature adjustment. But we essentially look at the 10 most recent days to set a baseline, and then we look at the usage during the day when we call an event. The EV chargers is also a little bit of a challenge, but what we're able to do is determine whether a customer was plugged in and charging during the event time period? And if so, we can look at what the reduction in load was during that time period. And for the EV charging, one of the things I essentially failed to mention is with the storage and the demand response, again, that's a pay for performance. The EV load management, that's more of a participation in incentive. So we're not going to pay you necessarily on how much you reduce. We're going to pay you for participating in the program more on the lines of what we see on the Wi-Fi thermostat types of programs, where it's not based on your actual reduction. It's based on participating in the program and then responding to the individual, to the signals, to each event signal. So we've had to take a little bit of a different approach. One thing that I think has been very helpful for us is that we've been able to contract with third-party independent firms that come in and essentially do the EMMV for us. And so what that allows us to do is take a step back and then read these reports. We obviously offer input into the program design and what the evaluator should be looking at. But at the end of the day, what we get is kind of a completely unbiased view of how these programs are working and suggestions for improvement going forward. So that allows us to kind of have this continuous improvement, essentially a feedback loop, where we can take those results and then improve the programs accordingly. And that's one of the things that we think is really important, especially with some of these newer types of programs that might include newer types of technologies, is making sure we're refining the program design so that we're able to essentially optimize what we offer and have the biggest impact for our customers.
We have a couple of user-submitted questions here on the same topic on incentives. And I guess I'll try to summarize them together. If you would just talk a little bit about sort of how you develop incentives. You know, are you basing on average load reduction, some peak hourly performance, worst hour performance, and then how you sort of view the benefits of maybe the technology agnostic versus storage as far as you know, the incentive that you think is appropriate?
Sure. So on the development of incentives, we have a couple criteria in mind when we develop incentive levels. The first is because these are offered through energy efficiency, our offerings have to be cost effective. So we can't incur more costs, which include incentive costs, than the measure or the offering generates. So that's kind of our grounding principle. The second part of the incentive is we try to structure it in such a way that it's large enough that it motivates a customer to do something they wouldn't normally do without that incentive. But at the same time, we don't want it to be too large such that we're unnecessarily expending funds. That's not really a good deal for the ratepayers. So we try to strike that balance by giving just enough to motivate the behavior while not giving too much, and all at the same time while keeping things cost effective. In terms of technology agnostic versus the storage, the same general principles apply. One of the things we like about the technology agnostic approach that I commented on a little bit earlier is that we're not trying to be overly prescriptive. We're not trying to tell a customer what types of measures or what types of activities they should be undertaking in their facility. These customers know their facilities inside and out way better than we ever could, and they know where they can get those demand reduction savings. And so the point of the incentive is to kind of tip them over that point where it makes sense for them to do that, and that we can then kind of aggregate all of the customers that are doing that, dispatch them at the same time, and have those overall system benefits. So that's, you know, in a nutshell, really the goal. One of the things that I would mention that we did come across and we are completely aware of is when you do a pay for performance program design and you start offering incentives after the fact, that doesn't necessarily help customers that have a first cost issue. So some of these types of technologies like batteries can be very expensive. And so the customers or the developers still incur that initial upfront cost. So one of the things we wanted to do that we asked for in Massachusetts on a little bit more of a trial basis is whether or not we could offer a 5-year incentive lock. So basically what that would do would be it would allow us to lock in the incentive level for 5 years. So there'd still be pay for performance. So there's still performance risk that relies on the customer. So you still have to perform at the level that you said you're going to perform at. But what it does is it takes away the risk that the incentive level is going to go away or go down. And that makes it a little bit more of a bankable revenue stream that customers can then use to get project financing or something along those lines. So to us, that was really important because that's kind of the complementary piece to the pay for performance design that we think will allow more of these projects to go forward. So Mike, I know you had a couple questions in one there. Hopefully that answered most of them.
Yeah, no, you absolutely did. And as we're coming up on time here, I want to just ask you one more question. You know, for folks listening from maybe other utilities across the country who are interested in expanding their load management capabilities with new DERs, you know, do you have any kind of key basics where to start? I know you discussed some takeaways as far as potential pitfalls with permitting and siting. But if you have anything else to share there, and also, you know, how to gain traction with not only, leadership within their own company, but also their regulator.
Topic at St. Pete at the next PLMA conference. So hopefully folks will be able to attend that and maybe catch me after a session or during the conference. But, you know, one of the things we did when we first started this out is, again, we didn't go into this with any preconceived notions. And we essentially went out to market with an RFI. We put this out there to technology and solution providers and said, you know, what technologies are out there? You know, come back to us with solutions. And that's really was the first step for us in order to frame out what we were going to do and then kind of have an idea of the different types of technologies we wanted to propose. And I think one of the reasons that we were ultimately successful with our regulators is we went in with a pretty well thought out and a pretty well defined plan. And so that RFI helped inform the technology choices. I spoke at the beginning of the session about all the load research we did in terms of customer load shapes and how that, you know, how we essentially disaggregated the ISO New England load shape into the customer load shapes. And then we married that with the RFI responses and the different technology types. And we had a pretty compelling argument, I think, at that point. And I think that was really helpful on bringing regulators on board as well. So, again, maybe a long-winded way of saying that really do your due diligence, do your market research, and I think that's what you usually get positive responses when you're able to do that and show that this is a really well-thought-out approach and program. But at the same time, you go into it with the best of intentions, but make sure that you're flexible as well. You will get curveballs that you didn't expect, whether that's on the permitting or the interconnection or, you know, who knows what else. But you almost have to expect the unexpected. So be flexible enough to deal with those issues as they come up.
Great. I think that's really some great advice, Michael. We're approaching time here. I want to say thank you so much for your time today, sharing your experiences with the group. And with that, I'm going to pass it back to Ed for some closing remarks.
You've been listening to the Load Management Dialogue podcast presented by PLMA. To learn about upcoming load management dialogues and an archive of past recordings, as well as some information about the St. Pete conference that Michael talked about, visit peakload.org or your favorite podcast platform. This concludes this edition of PLMA Load Management Dialogue.